there in a great big old, as Houston would say, Texas howdy to you out there, friends and neighbors. It's time for the Blind Handyman again, and I'm Phil Parr, sitting in for Tom Houston, who is feeling well, but not with us today. He's what he's doing.
I think it's a personality problem. I think he can't stand our personality.
You think it's sickness? Yeah. It's due to illness. He can't stand us?
That's right. I think he's sick of us.
Well, there is a possibility.
But in his stead, we have someone down the road, right?
We do. A guy in Houston, Texas named Dale Campbell. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, fellas.
Well, it is. If you just had a little sunshine, you'd be doing even better, wouldn't you?
If we had some sunshine, I tell you, we have weather that frogs and ducks just love.
Yeah.
Well, in addition to Dale Campbell, who's visiting our visiting handyman, you've already read his book, The Fifth Handyman.
That's right.
Be out in print soon. Don Patterson is with us.
That's right.
Good to have you, sir.
And Don, glad to be here.
And Don, over to my right, Don Shaw, ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, it's time. That handyman time again.
Handyman time again. So we have no shortage of big mouths with opinions today.
And this is show number?
Show number?
186.
Wow.
Yeah.
Dang.
I think this is the third 186 we've done.
No.
Hard to believe.
186 times we've said, well.
That's about it.
That's amazing. Anyway, we're here all gathered around, and it's sunshining in Lufkin, but raining in Houston, right?
Let me tell you an interesting thing to go with the 186.
All right.
The other night on CBS TV, Sunday night, I watched the Hallmark Hall of Fame TV. They always put it like a two-hour special. They said this, welcome to our 200th, and either they said 39th or 89th. That's not really important. But they've been doing it for over 50 years. They may do like four a year. They make a big production out of it. So I was thinking, we're catching up with them. We haven't been at it as long, but
50 years. You know? Has there been television? Yeah.
Well, they used to do a lot of them live. That would be in 55. I mean, I know they've been doing them for more than 50 years, but I just wonder how many of those 200 and something they still have, and what a CD that would sell. That big
man.
Time. People
well,
would probably,
and I think some of them were even back on the, you know, the old radio shows.
Yeah, that's entirely possible.
I think I've seen some of those on, you know, and downloading some of the old radio shows.
But we had television, when you think about it, I remember in 1949, my father and sister took a cab to Sears and bought a television, brought it home, Silvertone.
Wow. And then in Houston, they used to sing the song in 1951 or two, you know, the cable is coming, the 1st of July, the cable is coming. Because up until then, it was strictly local yokels. I mean,
I don't remember the cable is coming the 1st of July.
Channel 2 was our only channel at that time.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, and they had like, you know, little homemade shows. I mean,
yeah, well,
you got nothing outside of local talent, you know.
Well, you had Utah Carl.
I don't know if he was there, but you had Biff Collie. I mean, you had Curly Fox and Texas Ruby. You had
every night at 6:30, Curly Fox and Texas Ruby.
Dick Gottlieb and Paul Schmidt and the Toon Smiths.
Well, then you had Don Mahoney and Jeannie Claire.
Right. They were.
You don't remember any of this, Dale, do you, huh?
Not at all. I was not even a figment of imagination.
You're not old enough to have been around.
Let's see, in the 50s, no.
No, not you. How about The Late Show? First news and weather, then The Late Show. Remember that, Pat?
With Jim Ross.
Yeah.
Jim Ross was the host, and they played Claire de Lune as their theme song for the. And then he would.
That's amazing.
He was. Yeah, every movie had to have a host. I mean, it had to have somebody to introduce the movie and talk to you in between their commercial breaks.
Yeah, that was a big. It was kind of a big deal. Well, of course, they were part of the time they were rethreading that one DVR they had. That's what they were doing. Was guy back there was fast rewinding the DVR and rethreading it.
Do you remember Kitterick on KTRK? She was dressed up like a cat. Host for the afternoon movie.
I remember that one when I was a kid.
Yeah. Kitterick and my brother-in-law John was on. He said he wanted to be a fire engine. that's kind of weird. What year were you born, Campbell?
64.
Well, good Lord.
64. I remember, Captain Kangaroo.
That'd be about it for
and
you.
And Ghost Speed Racer and Giant Robot. And
Lost in Space.
Going back.
That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Well, we didn't want to take you back too
far. I was almost colorized by the time I started watching TV, you know.
Yep.
Black and white, what's that?
Yeah. I remember it brought to you in Living Color, pioneered and developed by RCA.
Living Color.
Yeah. That was 1955 when we first moved to Houston. I remember when Channel 11 was a Galveston television station.
Right, KGUL.
KGUL.
Wow.
11 Galveston.
Yeah.
And he moved it to Houston. I've never figured out how the FCC let him do that. Anyway, we're the Blind Handyman. We're talking about Houston TV, so let's get reader Don Patterson is substituting for Thomas Vick today, reading Handyman Mail. Don,
who is out due to illness, because
he's not ill. People be calling. He's not. He feels great. He's just a jerk.
Out.
Send him a card or two. Tell him to get over it. All right, this says right here, this is from our good friend K4ODS.
Max.
And it says, the building for my shop will be delivered tomorrow.
All right.
I decided to put it on blocks. That seems a lot easier than gravel. Regards, Max. Well, I can only say, I mean, my comment on that is, I hope he's having them put it on blocks, because if it's any size at all, and he wants it level, and he's going to do it himself, he's got himself a mammoth job.
Yeah. Well, that should be with delivery and setup, should be, you would think.
And you'd think they would level it for him.
Blocked and leveled.
Well, what was he going to do? Just set it on the ground?
I guess it could have had runners, you know.
Yeah?
On a gravel bed or something. I think he had kicked around doing it one time. But
on blocks or cedar posts would be infinitely better.
Do any of y'all have any idea how big his building is? He didn't say.
I don't know.
He told us maybe 16 by 20 or something.
16 by 24. I'm not sure either. I don't know.
I told him that he thought it was big. Well, that's going to be a lot of room. No, it isn't, once you get your tools in there.
It is. Boy, it's amazing how quickly tools can eat up space.
They sure can.
Especially even like a table saw, you got to have so much room on the sides and in front and back.
Say it's 16 by 24, he won't be able to cut a piece of 4 by 8 plywood in that building. He'll still have to cut that outside. You can't move it around in that building.
Yep.
Once you get your stuff in there, your beer fridge, which is essential.
And the beer fridge and the
paper towel holder and the, you know, chairs for spectators and the first aid kit, things of that nature.
And I don't know him very well, but I know him well enough to talk to him to know that he's probably got several pieces of ham radio equipment just hanging around that tends to accumulate a lot of space.
If he's going to put that in there, he's out of space already.
Yeah, he's out of space already. So
what I had to do was I put everything, all of my machines on rollers.
Yeah.
And simply roll them in and out as I need them. Because by the time you put yourself a workbench in there and line your tools up,
You can't. I tried to cut a piece of plywood in the shop one time, and I decided the easiest thing to do would be cut it outside on sawers or with a skill saw.
Yeah.
Well, you know, actually, with my setup that I have right now, I don't know that it'll be permanent, but it's been fairly permanent for the last 2 years. I just built an outside thing on plastic sawhorses so the weather won't get to them, and some real heavy lumber, and I have just a 14-foot long, something 3-foot wide that I can put a board on and cut instead of having to go, you know, wrestle around in the garage and all that.
That would be nice.
Yeah.
And then you've got that open pavilion that you can slide things, move things around in.
You betcha.
Slide things through. Anyway, Max, good luck with your building, but putting it on, leveling it with you had a little house jack wouldn't be a big deal, but surely they'll do that for him.
Oh, yeah, I couldn't imagine it, getting it any other way.
All right, anyway, next.
You know, unless it goes around here, they'd probably just dump it off on the ground and say, okay, there it is.
Dump it off.
They probably would, yeah.
All right, we got another one here. This is, Brailing Labels, and it says, the label guns are a bit slow for brailing labels. Slayton Stylus is slow and even painful. For doing big labeling jobs, I use tractor feed adhesive backed clear plastic sheets and run them through my old braille embosser. A couple of years ago, I actually cataloged, embossed, and stuck labels on almost 400 CDs.
Whoa.
It was a sweet way to do it. Well, I agree with him on the trapping. You know, if you have an embosser, that's the way to do it.
That's the way to go.
That old label gun is painful and takes a long time, but it sure does make a nice, good almost indestructible dots.
Oh, yeah. The dots hold up real well.
And that's what we did.
In fact, the label will come off, before the dots hold up.
Well, at one time, I remember y'all discussing the fact you had a certain kind of gun that you could no longer get. Has that been remedied, or do you have something better? Or?
I don't think you can buy this kind of gun. It's made of metal. It's long. The new one, I bought a new one. In fact, I gave it to one of your students.
Uh-huh.
Because it was a kind of a round affair that you couldn't. But this one, the long dymo tape thing, do they make that anymore?
I don't know. That'll be a question for
them. There is still a labeler, a braille label gun.
Yeah.
But 3M used to make one, and that is almost impossible to find now.
I think that's probably the one I have.
Independent Living Aids has one that we sell through the mice, but it's not the old heavy construction like they used to be. You know, it's the plastic and such like that.
This one is metal. I mean, you could hit a guy with it.
Yeah.
It's a powerful. But it is slow, man. You got to move that wheel around.
Yeah. Quick.
All right. Well, here's a good deal for some entrepreneurial type. Labels.com. Set it up.
Yeah.
Print labels for people.
Bet you it's
well, and, there are quite a few people out that do braille embossing. So if you don't have a braille embosser, get on the you can get on the net and go to Google and Google somebody that does braille embossing and send them a list of what you need. They'll braille it for you.
Yeah, there are a couple of freebie peoples out there, I think, that do stuff.
I
maybe
think so.
And they're for-profit guys that you read about those all the time, guys that do it, that want to make a buck or two doing it, which I don't mind paying.
I mean, you figure on sometimes they'll do it for $3 or $4 or $5 if it's only a page or two of labels that you need. That's a lot easier than sitting there all day long, quickly.
Well, and we won't beat this horse to death, but the guy talking about his embosser, in many libraries now, with the all the laws and everything that pertain to equal opportunity for the handicapped, many libraries have embossers. So,
Our college have an embosser, Mr. Don?
College does.
You know, we do have one, but the thing is, no one uses it anymore. But, yeah, we do have one.
Do you know how to use it? Wait a minute, you're the technology guy.
In a pinch, I guess I could use it.
You got my phone number, Sean.
In a pinch.
We've got the embosser, but nobody knows how to use it.
You need to figure out how to use it. What if some guy came in and went,
It's not likely.
Well, hold on to your hat, because I think Fallon might come to summer school. So.
Oh, really?
There's a Braille reader.
And
all right.
Yeah, she's a good Braille reader. Maybe she'll want something. Maybe you can figure that out, Don, next time we need.
She's in her first year at SFA, living in her own apartment up there by herself. She has some assistance. There's a lot of construction. She has some assistance getting around the campus. But all A's and B's.
And we never would have thought she would have been at all able to do that.
Emily said she cannot believe how she's matured and grown up. Just a young lady.
Getting away from home sometimes does that. I tried it with two wives, and it matured me real quick, I'll tell you that. You learn the thing about having a wife. The great thing about having a wife is they're willing to remind you of your excesses when you're smoking too much, drinking too much. Talking on the internet, they're there to help you with your problems.
And,
Phil said he had heard so many good things about having a wife, that's why he had three of them. All right, moving right along
here.
Send your mail to Phil Parr.
That's right.
It says, hi, I like to buy Avery labels and put them in my Perkins for quick. Label. There is a little guide, blah, blah. Do we want to go on with
that? Yeah, this is like a template thing or something for people with Braille writing. Now, this is a neat thing.
There is a little guide that you can put in a Perkins that will hold the label tape.
Never heard it.
Which works pretty well, too. Keith. That's from Keith. So maybe Keith can get on the lip and elaborate.
And if you had a Braille writer, that would be a fair, in this template, that'd be a pretty quick way to write up a label
that you can use dymo tape with.
Yeah, apparently you can.
Well, it would be. You've got a Braille writer too, don't you, big boy?
Yes.
I don't know who's Keith. Maybe we'll have him on.
Yeah.
I think Patterson is that guy. He's been on the show before. It's been a long time.
Well, maybe he'll get back on the list and elaborate on this.
Yeah, we need that. Right, we got time for one more.
We got one more, and this comes from our good friend, the hillbilly Clifford Wilson.
Oh, we love him. Don't
we love Clifford. And this says, dear handy ladies and gentlemen, my D drive on this computer, which is the first of two CD drives, refused to open last night. After playing a hot number by Dolly with the... change page. With the assistance of my wife, we found a small hole, and with the aid of a straightened paper clip,
yep,
we were able to get the Dolly CD out. But after the drawer was closed again, it has stayed shut and refuses to cooperate. I have an idea that a new CD drive is in order. Any suggestions as to how the old one can be removed without damaging the computer? I like this particular CD drive as it has buttons which allow me to play a CD without resorting to computer programs.
Yeah.
That works well for this hillbilly.
He doesn't know this, but those just slip in and out, those drives. I mean, you know, there's about four little screws, and disconnect it from the... There will be a little bunch back there that plugs the electricity into it, and there'll be several of them all tied together with one that goes to each drive and goes to your hard drive. And take it off, you know, unplug it from the sound card, and take those four screws out, and it'll just slip right out.
Will it probably have a wire for power and then the ribbon? The ribbon cable.
It'll be on the ribbon, but it'll be tied to the sound card somewhere.
It's just a little wiring harness.
Yeah, it's just a little wiring thing.
Connect in and connect out.
And it'll slip right out. You can slip another one in. They're interchangeable. Slip it in, put the four screws in.
And he says, I assume that the old one that has refused to work is the one he says he likes about having the buttons.
Yeah.
And so he could get that same CD player probably from the computer.
It's the same one and an updated drive.
If you're mechanically inclined at all, you can change it in 15 minutes. I mean, that's not a big deal anymore.
Because I'm at the point right now where my burner drive is so old it's outdated, and a lot of the new software won't work with it. It won't recognize it. So I've got to replace mine too.
Yes, time.
I'm thinking about replacing it by calling Dell, you know, and just replacing the whole enchilada.
Just replace the whole computer, huh?
Yeah.
Wow.
Then I'll have Mr. Shaw down, let him transfer all my files.
Well, yeah, how about that new laptop you got for Christmas, Dale?
That is still sitting under the tree.
Man, I'd be opening that thing.
I have not had opportunity one to even go mess with that thing
yet. I can't understand why you don't get that going.
So you're another guy that keeps their Christmas tree up till May or June, huh?
Yeah.
I had a friend at one time, and he said that's finally how his parents discovered that he may be a substance abuser, that he had his Christmas tree up in July,
uh-huh.
And they finally confronted him.
Yeah, we've got a squirrel nest living in it, so we didn't want to disturb it.
After
we towed it, you know, moved it out to the back porch.
Yeah.
My grandma wanted to one time just have a closet, nothing for the Christmas tree. You know, Christmas over, she could just stuff that thing in the closet
and then
the
get it out
with Christmas.
Get it out next year.
Next year rolls around, drag it back out.
Yeah, I heard about these folks one time that had this house with this real high attic, and they made like this trap door, like blank place out of their ceiling they could open and close, a little block and tackle, and they'd just crank the Christmas tree up in the attic and close the ceiling.
Well, you know, world we live in nowadays, you know, like you can get virtual aquariums, anything, just show on your TV, a virtual fireplaces. So how about the blank wall and the virtual Christmas tree?
I'll bet somebody makes one.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, we've got, we're going to do the guest, and his name is, I can't think of it.
John Swery.
John Swery. We have not had him on before, and we're going to find out what John Swery is all about. Dale Campbell's with us, and Don Patterson, and Don Shaw. I'm Phil Parr. We'll be right back. successfully dialed the telephone. That was a big job for me. As I said, Dale Campbell is with us from his home in Houston. Don Patterson, Don Shaw, and Phil Parr. Along with John Swery. How are you, John?
Fine.
Good. Glad to have you. How do you pronounce your last name again?
Swery.
It is Swery. Yeah. And where are you located?
I'm in Silver Springs, Florida, which is right next to Ocala.
Which is considerably warmer than we are, I imagine.
Yeah, we're in the 50s.
Is that right?
Wow. Yeah.
Well, you hadn't got too much on us. We're in the 50s. Let me introduce you. I'm Phil Parr. We have Dale Campbell with us.
How you doing, John?
How are you?
And Don Patterson.
Yeah, John, tell us what, not being familiar with Florida, north or south, east or west, Florida, your town.
Well, we're in...
Are you in the panhandle?
No, we're in north central Florida. We're right next to the Ocala National Forest, and we're in the middle of the state between the coasts so the hurricanes don't get here.
Very good.
Very good. That would be a plus.
It would.
In Florida, yeah. I would believe. Dale Campbell, Don Shaw, and Don Patterson. Don Shaw is with us also.
Yeah, hey, John.
And we understand. Are you on our list? Blind handyman
on the list.
You're on the blind handyman list?
Yeah, and I've seen... some of the other names on a bunch of other lists I'm on. So.
Yeah, we get around. We try to
several lists around.
We try to do. What sorts of handyman things do you do?
I'm sorry. Just a second here.
John must be having trouble hearing.
Okay. What was that about the handyman?
Are you having trouble hearing us?
Yeah, I'm still adjusting my one of my hearing aids a little bit.
Oh, your hearing aid is that right? So you have some hearing loss.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do too, but I refuse to wear those damn hearing aids. They drive me nuts. They drive me crazy. Anyway, what kind of handyman things do you do?
I'm sorry, what?
I say, what sort of handyman things do you do?
Oh, well, I, of course, I started out in, well, I guess actually it started out on the farm when my dad would put us to work doing various things. But then in school, I took some shop classes in wood, and then when I got out of school, I took a machine shop course using metal tools. And then I haven't really had any space to do anything. So for about 35 years, I didn't get to use any... power tools.
Oh, yeah?
And then recently, then when I moved to here, I picked up a table saw and a router and a routing table and an electric pointer. And done some things like build a gate for out front and a handrail for on our O&I in the back and a few other things. I think one of the most gratifying things that we made is my wife and I made a set of doggy steps for her daughter's dog because they have a bed that top is about 2 feet off the floor, and one of her dogs is a bit arthritic and couldn't get up on the bed anymore. So I said, "Well, we'll just make a set of steps for her." So
that's pretty cool.
Got some went to Lowe's and got a couple of those three-step stringers and. Some 1x10 boards for the steps and some 3/8 plywood for the back and the sides. And I had my wife help me cut out the plywood on the table saw and then put boards across the stringers for steps and routed off
the edges
of the steps with a round over bit to give them a little bit of a rounded edge and mm-hmm. then. They finished it off with carpet on the sides and on the steps, and the dog used it right away. So that was gratifying.
Now, you say stringers for steps. That's the side pieces that have slots that you fit boards in, or what?
Oh, you mean for the steps themselves?
Yes, sir.
Just got some 1x10s.
Yeah.
Yeah, the stringer is the edges of the steps, right?
Yeah, I routed the edges, with a round-over bit.
Okay. John, I wondered, you just talked about getting your wife to help you with the table saw. What is the level of your vision?
I'm total.
Total, okay, very good. I mean, that's not good, but...
most things I do myself on the saw, but for part of that cutting out... See, we took pieces of plywood and cut them out so that they would match the steps and also fill in where the risers didn't hit. And
okay.
So for some of that, you have to cut in into the board a ways and stop.
Right.
And I
didn't... You needed to know where to stop at.
I'm sorry?
I said you needed to know where to stop. That's what we needed the eyes.
Yeah, and so I had her help with some of that. Otherwise, I do all that stuff myself.
Well, plus handling a big old sheet of plywood or cutting plywood down on a table saw, that is almost a two-person job.
It is.
Yeah.
To be safe.
It is. But now, you alluded to the fact that you did some work in a machine shop. Was that from at the blind school?
Yeah, I used... engine and turret lathes, vertical and horizontal mills, drill presses, some grinding. And I used micrometers and a rotomatic pretty much for a measuring. And I'd like to do more metal work, but it just takes too much space for the tools demanded for that. And when I... So I had to kind of decide whether I wanted to go into wood and or metal, and seems like for most things around here, wood's better, so I went that route.
Well, and then the machine tools would be expensive, wouldn't they? I mean, are things like
that? Yeah, they are.
Pretty expensive. Well, that's pretty progressive. What blind school was this that let you do that?
Well, the machine shop training I just took at a adult... machinist class in a one of the high schools where I was at that time.
And but letting a blind person do that is pretty. You know, usually they say, "Oh, you couldn't do that. You cut your damn hand off." You know,
say that.
And I'm amazed they let you. But that's great.
Did you ever, John? Did you ever try to take what you had learned about machining and actually secure a job with it?
Well, I wasn't quite good enough for tool and die. I might have been able to do something production related, but I could never find anything along
that
line.
It would have had to have been just a one shot. I mean, you do the same thing every night, every day, over and over, right? Just an assembly line type deal.
Yeah, for production work.
Yeah.
Yeah, what did you do for a living when you worked? I guess you're retired, aren't you?
Well, pretty much. I'm in between jobs. The last 10 years, I spent doing some telemarketing work, selling mostly accident insurance. Before that, I've done a little bit of work for Social Security as a service representative. I did a little bit of typing for a state employment office, typing up employment or unemployment hearings and decisions. Had a part-time job doing some shell reloading, using some shell reloading equipment. I've done a little bit of survey work. So,
goodness.
Done some various things, I guess.
Shell reloading. Let's talk about that. How'd you get into that? That's pretty cool.
Well, it was the machine that I was using. I was taking the pins out of shells and then on other machines they would reload them, firing the, I forget what you call that cap that the firing pin hits to set off the powder, but they put those little caps in there and powder and bullets, so...
What
was this some like for either the military or the police department? I can't imagine them reloading. I mean, I guess copper or brass is expensive, but I mean, were y'all doing this for some agency, i.e., police or?
I don't really remember who his clients were. But I remember they were 308 shells.
Yeah, I have a couple of friends that reload their own, but they do it just as a hobby, just because they can. But I can't imagine people. I guess it's cheaper in the long run to do reloads, and bullets are fairly expensive, I think.
Plus, he said that his reloading was better than the factory reloads.
Okay.
Well, what do you mean by better? It would kill a guy quicker? Or
what? maybe the...
The deer would go.
Specifications were more uniform, I guess.
The deer would say, "God,
amounts of powder and so on." And
wish you hadn't used that reloaded shell.
Well, they can see the reloaded shell and they just fall over dead.
That's
you
right.
Have to fire the gun.
Yeah, that's pretty amazing. He said his shells would be better. I guess some perfectionist gun guy, Republican, obviously.
John, I had a question about your telemarketing.
John?
Hello?
Yeah.
Well, I was wondering, like, I understand that's kind of a speed deal, or it's kind of based on, you know, how many contacts you make, or I guess they like you to make a lot. Were they favorable to you to use your, I mean, were you reading your list with JAWS and a computer, or did somebody braille your list for you? How did you operate?
No, I was using WindowEyes and a braille display.
Okay.
Okay.
And what I did is I left the WindowEyes mouse cursor parked where the name would pop up.
Okay.
And I got to where, if we would get a new script, you know, I might fumble around for the first few calls reading the script, but after that, I would just have the script in my head and using my own ideas and so on.
Yeah.
I would just do it from my head, and about all I needed the display for was to read the name, and then for some things that we had to fill in, I was able to do that too.
Basically, you had the script memorized by the time you'd done it 3 or 4 times.
Yeah, not quite memorized, really. I try not to memorize it because I didn't want it to sound canned or whatever.
Yeah.
But you were able to process an order should you get one. And
yeah.
Should somebody want your services, you could type in all their information.
Yeah.
Okay, let me ask you this, because we're always in search of jobs. On a scale of 1 to 10, roughly, is that a good job for a blind person?
Yeah, I would say an 8 or 9, yeah.
Really?
Okay, that's interesting. Because there seems to be quite a bit of that around, you know. I mean, were you in competition? Were you paid according to how many contacts you made?
No, we were paid... Well, we had a basic wage that we got no matter how we did, and then we had
incentive
money based on our percentage of sales on the floor with however many everybody else got. We got money based on percentage of sales.
Very good.
And you obviously did all right at this. You did it for a while, right?
Yeah, I was able to
Yeah. That'd be a tough way to make. I wouldn't care for it, but I guess, you know, I didn't like selling brooms either, but I had to eat.
Yeah,
you know, and drink and things like that, things of that nature. Smoke cigarettes and I needed money, so
right
you know, you do what you have to
do,
right? Yeah.
Something else I had to contend with a little bit when I started my shop hobby, I guess, again, is that I didn't have much space. All we have is a 10x10. So once I decided to go with wood, I started looking around for anything that would fold or anything that would fit into small spaces. And so the table saw I got was a job site table saw made by Hitachi. And it has two wheels on one end for rolling it around, and then once you pull it to where you want, the two sets of legs will unfold from it, Uh-huh. They can set it up and use it that way. And, of course, I made a bench in the shed, and I instead of having the support legs up on the front straight down, I angled them back to the vertical legs next to the stud and supported them that way.
Mm-hmm.
And something, and then of course my and my routing table folds up as well, so that helps. And now I'm thinking about just making a small little a table for doing work outside, and of course it'll fold up as well because I'm tired of using my table saw for a workbench outside.
Yeah.
Now, what I did, I used some saw horses, and I've got a table like that that it actually will store on the side of my workbench. So again, space is the man. Space is the commodity, that is for sure. But when I need to work outside, I unfold the saw horses and set that table out there, and away we go.
Yeah.
A little tool that I picked up for helping me do angles is just is a T square. It's like a one part of it is looks kind of like a knife blade, and the other end of that has a slot into which another piece slides back and forth. And so with those two pieces, I can get the angle that I need, and then just reproduce that angle on the saw. I don't care what degree the angle is, just so I can
I've got one of those
really
little gauges, too. They are very handy.
I have one of those. But you know, that's what we've always talked about. Measuring is not as important. And you don't need to know that it's 5 3/8. You just need to know what it is, you know.
Yeah, yeah. How far is it from here to there?
How far is it from here to the you know, that's what you need to know. So braille measuring, talking measuring tapes are nice, but certainly not necessary.
Yeah, what I use for measuring mostly is a rotomatic.
Yeah.
I don't know what a rotomatic is.
Well, it's a... The main part of it is a 6.5-inch unit that is a 3/8-inch rod,
uh-huh,
threaded 16 threads to the inch. On one side, it is milled off a bit, so it will sit flat. On the opposite side, it's milled off in the same way, except that every half inch, a thread sticks up.
I got you.
So you got your half-inch markings there. Now, the 16 threads to the inch is important because you have a kind of a nut-like object that is notched on one side.
All right.
And that turns on that rod. So every turn, when that notch is up, is a 16th of an inch. Now, you have another nut that turns against that nut-like object for locking. So
to hold it.
In your measurement.
Okay.
Then, at one end of that little 6.5-inch rod is a threaded hole for extensions. You have 6-inch extensions, 12-inch, and 18-inch. And you can order as many extra extensions as you like.
Where did you get this little jewel?
Well, I know the NFB Material Center has them.
Uh-huh.
I know my state agency, where I used to live in Iowa, has them, too.
So you can order them from the NFB Material Center?
Yes.
All right. We're saying it right here on ACB Radio. I know they'll love that. But I don't, you know, it's the way it is.
I think they're around $55, somewhere in that neighborhood. For that, you get the 6.5-inch measuring unit,
uh-huh,
and then you get a 6-inch extension, a 12-inch, and an 18-inch. And you can order extra extensions.
And that's about half or maybe a third the cost of the talking measuring tape, and as far as I'm concerned, would be much better.
A lot more functional.
No batteries. I mean, once you lock that nut down, you know you've got five.
You have it. Dale,
with this thing, you can get to within 1/64th of an inch.
Well, sure
pretty
could.
Accurately.
Did you say you use this, Dale?
No, I don't use that. I use the talking tape measure.
Okay.
They talked a lot on the list, though, about these in the last week or two.
I'm going to sell my tape measure on eBay. Buy me one.
That's what I would do. Sure.
They also make a similar device that I haven't used that some of the other guys use called a click rule, and I guess that may be quicker. But yep. I don't think it's quite as accurate.
I've read about Click Ruth, but I've never seen one.
I haven't either.
Somebody said it's a talking measuring tape, and I said, how much and where do I get it? And I bought one. And
yeah.
Every time I want to use it, which is every 6 months, the battery's dead, and I got to change the battery and get it working again and clear it, and I'm tired of it. I'm going to get rid of it. It's out of here.
I'd roll it out.
John Swarry, sir, we thank you. I appreciate you being our guest on the show, and you've led a pretty interesting life, and we appreciate you sharing it with us.
You're welcome.
All right, John, we'll talk with you. This will be on ACB Radio this weekend.
Okay.
Nice to meet you, John.
Thank you.
Have a good day, John.
Thank you.
Send us some sunshine, please.
We need it.
That's right.
Yeah.
All right, John Swarry has been our guest on that. Let's see which one he's right there. There we go. Dale, are you there, still there?
Dale is here.
Oh, I thought I pushed the wrong button.
Hey.
All right, we're going to talk about Don Patterson's almost finished project. It's been almost finished now. Let's see, this is 07.
No, it hasn't been almost. I mean, we're down. It's been going to be, and it's been a lot of things, but now it's almost.
This is really it. Huh?
It'll never be all the way finished.
We're going to take a little break and go get a cold one and be right back. Hang on. Say howdy and welcome back to the old show here. We still have sunshine and everything's going. John Swarry, knowledgeable guy, done a lot of things. And like you said, it would be tough to have some other problems besides being. I bitch about being blind all the time. I need to shut up, don't I?
But your hearing,
yeah,
is so,
hearing.
So
if you lost your hearing
so
and you were blind,
yeah.
It would be a tough road.
Tough,
now.
Very well, yeah, so. Yeah. I think he handled it very well.
Lost that hearing and you were blind. You're in trouble, aren't you?
Really?
Yeah. Oh yeah.
You there, Dale? Oh no,
yeah.
There's
hey,
Dale.
Have you guys seen the ad that's been running? Sometimes it runs like a little infomercial, and sometimes it's a little ad that's on some of the home improvement cable channels. For the new planer, it's not really a planer, but it's a molder shaper that Sears is selling.
No.
It is like a table. I mean, it's like a, you know, a planer, except you can somehow, now I don't know how exactly you do it, but you can have all these different templates to where you can run a piece of wood through it, and it will mold it. It'll cut it like molding for you.
You know, I did see that, and I wonder
about,
how that works.
$1,900.
How much?
About $1,900.
Well, no, I won't. Then I don't want to see it.
Yeah, this is it.
It lowers.
In the past, if you were like doing some siding or something, and say you needed to do a replacement siding, back when we were roofing and stuff, sometimes there'd be some bad wood that the customer would want replaced, and sometimes we could, you know, it was just straight fascia that we could replace, but other times it had some molding or some bead work on it, and you'd have to take it to a mill shop to let them do it.
Yeah.
But with this device, you can do your own custom patterns, or you can, you know, pick from their template of designs. But it'll take a piece of wood up to 2 inches thick and up to 12 inches wide.
And mold it like you want it.
Planer.
So you get lots of sawdust with this sucker.
A lot of sawdust.
You better have your shop cleanup equipment.
Yes.
But you'd have to do a lot of that to be able to offset
justify,
the price.
Yeah,
for somebody that's doing like custom cabinetry or anything like that, where you want to have some molding or something besides just running a router across the edge or something.
Yeah, let's see.
It's a pretty cool tool. That in the past these machines were $25,000 to $500,000, depending on their size.
Wonder if you can make raised panel doors with it.
Sure.
Let's see. Molding is $1 a foot, $1,900,
$1,900.
Let's say you need a piece. Let's say you're doing custom cabinetry.
Oh, I hear you.
You're wanting a piece. You know, you're doing something that's, you need something 8 inches thick or 8 inches wide.
Yeah.
You're not going to find that at Home Depot.
If you can do raised panel doors with it, you're wick. Because I remember when we bought these raised panel doors for my cabinets in the kitchen, I damn near passed out.
They're expensive.
I couldn't believe.
Yeah.
You know, we went up and the guy said, "How much we owe you?" "Oh, that'll be $8,000. What?
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 Yeah. Well, you know, there again, it's like you say, if a guy was doing that and could make a living to make his machine pay for itself.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, that's the case. It would be an extravagance or a great toy.
But its size.
For the weekend warrior. But to have that ability now in your home.
Yeah.
Is really it's really neat, and of course as time goes on, more companies will start making them, and hopefully the prices will start dropping.
They're making more little neat compact, smaller versions of big stuff that's really neat.
Yeah.
I mean that's.
Well, I started to suggest to that guy. I've never seen one of these, but I know two or three people have got them. He's short on space. Have you ever thought about a shop smith? Have you ever seen one?
No,
yes.
I haven't.
A shop smith is a table saw and a chop saw and a wrench. Three or four things combined into one. And the guy that I know that has it, Victor Bruce, Scott's father-in-law, swears by it. And he's a sighted guy and does all kinds of neat things.
You know, everybody I know that has one of those loves them because you've got so many different tools combined in one, and it's just a simple, just a simple adjustment here and there to access one as opposed to the other.
If it was simple, I would go for it. But boy, I've had some of those where an all-in-one. This thing will do 76 different vacuum cleaners, and man, knife sharpener
don't
and all
the
that.
The instructions, right?
Yeah, but if somebody was there and could show me one time how do you convert the table saw into the miter. Saw.
Right.
And I knew how to do it. I'd like it. But
the first drill I bought, you know, I was very ignorant. I didn't know anything. I just knew I needed a drill. And I wanted to put a plug someplace where there wasn't one. So I went to Sears or someplace and bought me a drill. And with this drill came a little deal to mount this drill and make it into a drill press.
Right.
And I've never found one, but it was the neatest thing in the world.
They still sell them, but they're sold separately now.
Yeah,
but they'll take like a little 3/8 inch or a half inch portable drill, and turn it into a little drill press.
That's what I did. I made a little drill. I just thought that's neat, and I mounted it on a table, and I thought, look at me, I've got woodworking.
I like to think that I'm as good as anybody in putting things together, and really, I'm very meticulous with instructions. But I want you to know when they went to this assemble it yourself instead of going into Sears and being able to buy the router mounted on its table, they sent me home with the router and the table in a box that I had to put. I never got that puppy together. I mean, I had parts over that the instructions never covered.
Yes.
I mean, it never found its way to the table.
Some assembly required will hurt you.
I'm telling you.
Would you take it back or what?
No, I have sold it to my uncle. You know, when I had my first tool liquidation here.
Yeah, the first
tool sale. I know he couldn't be missing anything, but I still have some of the parts to the table.
Yeah, when I brought my, I bought a big, 15-inch floor drill press, and that came in pieces. And I was like, oh, man, this can't be that hard.
Well, now
there's only so many pieces to it, but holy cow.
Really?
Candace reading me the directions how to put stuff together, because I was like, golly.
We put mine together, didn't we, Don Shaw?
Yeah.
Remember?
Yeah. Oh,
I bought it at the tool show. It was $90-something, and you and I and some other guy.
Router?
No, this was a drill press.
Yeah.
We put it together.
I think I could do, a drill press, maybe because I've seen one in my... So when I bought my router, I don't think I'd ever been around a router, and I certainly didn't know exactly how they were supposed to mount on the table.
Well, the thing is you've got a back...
fence
on that router that's got to be pretty accurate to run that board across there and get your, just the little lip done just right. Robert Todd put mine together, and I love it.
Well, he would know how to do it.
All right. Well, you were going to tell us about your, this is a Don's almost finished project.
Well, we are, you know, goodness, I see, in the sunny days we had here about a week or so ago, or two weeks, you know, I got the concrete poured for the dog pen, so, and the kennel now, the pen is up there. I have one 10 by 10 with the, have you seen the little dog houses that are made out of, like, PVC?
Yes.
They look like from Mars. But anyway, my pen, my 10 by 10 pen sits out in the middle of the slab, and it has a nice roof over it. It's going to have lights and fan, and then we also, inside the 10 by 10, I have one of these new doggy kennel things, so they can get in, out, even warm. You can put them now. It's useful through much of the bad weather. Now, on a rainy day or even a little cool weather is a good place for the dog to get. And so we have that finished. And the pavilion is all, you know, all my brickwork is done, all the roof's done, the ceiling is up. I use this beautiful pine ceiling, and all of, and so this weekend I rented a trencher. And my trusty helper that I hired, we trenched over, and so we have water and electricity to the pavilion. That was about 100-something feet of plumbing and conduit and wire. And so then we dug the trench for the drain. The biggest problem I'm going to have is hooking the commode that's going to be in the bathroom and the pavilion into my existing system. And that's another about running a drain line, 3-inch, to make sure you have adequate fall on hilly terrain, about 140 feet. And so that's my last. And then after that, it's pretty much just putting up.
And light. You have to go through a valley.
Yeah, a little go. I think we've checked the elevation, and we think we can do it. We think we can
you
keep
think you'll
the
have
right
enough fall.
Fall. But just digging down, their existing pipe that we're going to tie into is exactly 24 inches deep. So that means we got to dig down about 30 inches to get under it and around it, and it's a 3-inch pipe, so we have to dig this huge hole.
That's
well,
going to be...
the trencher we rented just wasn't capable, and I don't have really the inclination to get a backhoe. I mean, they're expensive, so that's going to have to be done by hand, and I'm telling you, that's a lot of digging. And so,
call this guy... I know a pretty cheap plumber. Loggins has gotten so high now you can't use him anymore.
Yeah, you can't deal with him. There
but
is.
This guy, I'll think of his name. He's a client of Luann's, and he's getting a divorce.
Out on work release, I guess.
No. Some of them are.
Come down to Houston on the corner of San Jacinto and Travis.
Yeah. Well, I have
picked up a couple of guys to dig that hole.
Well, I have some of those. I have a fellow named Ruben that would fit in well down there, and he came and was spent 30 minutes on my sheetrocking job and said, "Hey, you got $100 for me?" And I said, "Hell, you ain't even through you. What are you talking about?"
Yeah.
Yeah, I had one of those guys looking at doing some facial repair. Yeah, I think it was $350 a day.
Yeah.
I go, "What?" And he goes, "Yeah, I think we do it in 3 days." I'm like, "I can do it in 3 days."
Yeah.
Yeah.
When that happens, when we pull the plug, when I'm able to flush the commode, it's going to be a signed, sealed, and delivered project.
Yeah.
It's all the painting is basically done, caulked. I mean, it turned out to be a really nice two project.
Right. Now,
so we're going to have a ribbon cutting ceremony before the first flush.
We could have one.
All right.
Yeah, I think that's good. Now, we were talking a while ago about a tool that I was not familiar with. Excuse me. What is it called? It's called a
hopper gun.
Hopper gun.
Yeah.
Dale, do you know what a hopper gun is?
No, I don't.
That's amazing.
Is that what the Easter Bunny uses?
Yeah, a hopper gun.
That's right.
Yeah. All right, tell us what a hopper gun is.
All right, well, when I was hiring the sheetrock fella, and I'm certain he'll be back.
I'm not.
I asked him, you know, could he tape and float? And we had he has a son, so his son speaks real good English and Spanish, so he was able to communicate. Oh yeah, tape, I do sheetrock, and he had all of his tools, and I was impressed. So he saw some texture because the job entailed taping and floating. A lot of people call that mudding and bedding. But
right.
Anyway, here down in Texas, or around here, we call it taping and floating.
What you're doing is taping between the seam, the sheetrock comes together.
Making it all smooth.
And making it all smooth. That's what you're doing.
And then the texture and paint. And so when he just happened to be in one of my other garages, and he said, "Do you want texture just like this?" And it's called like the orange peel. It's a very minimal roughing. And I said, "Yeah, that's exactly." I said, "Do you have a hopper gun?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, he knows how to sheetrock then. A hopper gun is a device that you add sheetrock mud in. It has a big cone-shaped like thing that stands on the top. That's called the hopper. And it's air-powered. You use an air compressor. And it blows the sheetrock mud onto the sheetrock and textures it, and you have a dial that you can actually dial in the amount of texture you want. Orange peel versus real rough, not so rough. Even it'll do some splattering kind of. And so that's basically what the gun is. And the hopper is set on there with a wing nut in a sense where you keep it level. You because it's open on one end, you wouldn't want to dump all your mud. But if you say you were going to do the ceiling, you can point the gun almost up and still keep the hopper level by adjusting this wing nut.
So you've seen one, Dale. You just didn't know what they were called,
right? I didn't know what they were called, yeah.
Hopper gun.
Yeah, my uncle, we did that when he did redid his cabin, or he did, you know, the basement of his cabin or whatever. He sheetrocked it.
I believe they use a similar thing, maybe on a bigger scale, to do gunite in pools. That's also blown on, but I didn't get the, even though they did my pool, I did not examine their equipment, but it sounded a lot like a
hopper
gun.
Well, I'd like to see one of those. Tool. I did not know about it. I've never seen. It's a hopper gun.
Very handy. You know, it's an item-specific thing.
It does, what it does.
It does.
It's like a roofing gun.
Right.
All right, Mr. Campbell, thank you so much, sir.
Well, you're very welcome, gentlemen. Thanks for having me in.
Don't forget Blind My Smart at blindmysmart.com.
That's right. The mouse hole scholarships are now open. We've got $2,250, $750 scholarships.
And, you can get a hold of you at blindmysmart.com, or what is your other address?
Let's see, Cooking in the Dark.
Yep.
At houston.rr.com, or catch us on the mice line, 713-876-6971.
Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you next time.
Have a great day.
All right. Dale Campbell, Blind My Smart, and all those kinds of things. Don Pat, Don Shaw, thank you, guys. Appreciate you.
Yeah, another one.
Another one bites the dust.
Because you realize when I finish this project, we finally set it up, then we're going to have to hunt up something.
We're going to figure out something to talk about, aren't we?
And then I'll give them those eBay links to buy that set of tools.
Buy those too.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, gentlemen. I'm Phil Parr, and I see said the blind man as he picked up his hammer and saw. Bye-bye.